welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program, broadcast on the Community Radio Network. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time.
This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and this is Listen to Older Voices and the third and final part of the life and times of 66-year-old Glyn Mason. Like most baby boomers, Glyn immersed himself totally in music, and remember, the changes in society post-World War II were very much reflected in the changes and development of popular music. Glyn's story is told with the skill and passion of a man that has made the better part of his life a life playing and composing music as a professional musician. Glyn is a man who's played with some of the best groups in New Zealand and then from the late 1960s onward with the very best in Australia. Glyn's story, while oriented around music, is engrossing because he weaves personal observations on life around him with the changes society was going through, and being a wordsmith, he's a natural-born storyteller. There are many twists and turns in his life, not the least being that at one stage he took up an adult apprenticeship in landscaping, which turned out to be a very expensive exercise. All will become clear as we settle back and are thoroughly entertained by this baby boomer musician, who is also a man who is able to clearly articulate the thoughts, desires, and beliefs of many of his generation. We pick up now with Glyn talking about his early days as a singer in a professional band.
No, I used to play rhythm guitar a bit, right. But in the bands that I ended up doing, like in the version of Jigsaw that went to Auckland, I didn't play rhythm because the three piece was the go, right?
Okay.
Because you're linking it to like the Who and all
yes.
that sort of thing.
Yes.
You know, we had like a singer and, yes. and all that kind of stuff and all yes. that sort of stuff. So I was a singer then, and like a kind of a front guy. So I thought, and they said, well, you can do that, but hey, man, yeah, you know, we'd love you, you know, we want to use everything in the studio. So you can play guitar and you know, if you've got any songs, yeah, let's give them a go, you know. So that's exactly what we did. And so that led to the collection of the songs on the album, one of which was an English song from, I can't remember the guy, pop song called My Son John.
Mm.
So we recorded the Madrigal album. We went out on the road in New Zealand. By the time we'd finished the tour, My Son John was number one in New Zealand. And so we just sort of left on that high up there and we came to Australia. And Benny Levin and Russell Clark were our managers over there. And their connection in Australia was a guy called Dennis Smith. You might recognise the name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was their kind of connection here, and he was a sort of an agent in his own right in Victoria. He took us on, and he was the guy that was getting us a work around Victoria as the Rebels. Just the Rebels.
Just the Rebels.
Yeah, not
yes.
Larry's.
No.
Rebel, yeah. And so the rest is kind of history.
But that really was like the door opening when you came back to Australia with the Rebels, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because well, look at bigger and better things happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's been a sort of a checkered career. I mean, look, every outfit that I've been in, I've learnt so much from everybody. I've worked with some unbelievably great players who still are on the scene and are great musicians and vocalists and all the rest of it, right? And I've learnt every step of the way. And I think if you make the mistake of thinking that you're not learning, you're in trouble, you know.
Mm.
And we know how much ego there is in the world of entertainment. It's always been a growth thing for me. And I've been one of those really fortunate people that I've never actually been out of work for too long in one form or another. So, you know, I went from this band to that band, then I had my own band, and then that broke up and I joined another good band. Yeah, because, you know, the musical fraternity sort of floats inside its own big bubble.
You also worked for Fender for a few years, didn't
oh,
you?
Oh, yeah.
How did that happen? How did that come about?
Well, basically, in New Zealand, I'd had the early stages of throat cancer at one point, where I burst the blood vessels in my throat, as you do when you're trying to be Wilson Pickett and you're not.
That's right.
That's exactly what happened. Mm. I was in a band there, and we just did soul music.
Yeah.
Right, because soul was the big thing, late 60s, right? All those English tours. So, and I just loved it. I heard that music. I still do, and it's one of the most joyous forms of music I could possibly imagine. And even when they're singing really down and sad songs, there's somehow to me they're like joyous. There's always spectacular artists. I don't know why, you know. So think of all the great ones, and they're all great. So I was in a band there, and we were just doing that, and over a year, and I think I was pushing the envelope a bit, like most sort of mm-hmm. youth does. And I got to a point one day, and I went into we were rehearsing, and I could do sort of medium octave to medium high, and then I'd lost the complete top end, just wouldn't come out.
Yeah.
And I went, yeah, okay, this is sort of weird, you know. Anyway, went to a doc, and he goes, well, you're really lucky, man, that you came in now, because 6 months from now you probably may have lost your voice, and may, because you've got the beginnings of nodes on your larynx, right? So, and that's what happens, is that if you strain your vocal cords too badly and you're using your voice the wrong way, like I did, you burst blood vessels at the top of your larynx, and as the blood seeps down, it gets caught on your larynx, and that becomes the beginning of stones or the nodes. And so usually, I don't know how common it is today, but it can be a very, very delicate and dangerous operation, because if you move or the surgeon moves and slashes your vocal cords, it's kind of like the end of that. So I'm sure medicine's, gone a long way since then.
It must have been a little bit concerning at that
time. Oh, man, I was told, he just said, well, you're lucky, man, because what you're going to have to do now, and I wasn't allowed to talk for over 3 months. I just had to write notes, and I had to paint my throat, and I had medication. So the band went,
of course.
I was out. I was gone.
Yeah.
So over here, when I went through sort of kind of like several bands and back and forwards between sort of like Sydney and Melbourne living and all that kind of stuff. I was up in Sydney. I went back up to Sydney in 84, and I joined a band there with Tony Mitchell from Sherbet mm-hmm. and Harvey James on guitar and John Lee, the drummer from the Dingoes.
Mm.
And Harvey and John had been playing with Richard Clapton and still kind of were. They used to go out on tour with him. And anyway, we formed this band. That didn't last for long. I did a few solo things. And then we formed this band called Baby Loves to Cha-Cha with a great friend of mine, Jeff Rosenberg, on bass. He'd played bass in Stockley C. Mason and stuff as well. So this band was after that.
Right.
Stockley C. had busted up. And I went back up there. We had the soul band. And we did exactly the same thing, but it was a lot more, a lot more professional.
Sophisticated.
Tunes, yes. We had the whole bag going down, we had the dance moves and the thing going on, and, the bootlace ties and the whole sort of thing. And again, we had great fun. It was just enormous. And there was a big rush of that again up in New South Wales. So if you went over to Balmain and you went into any pub and club over there, it was a huge haven for soul music. There was like five or six major soul bands going around. The Dynamic Hypnotics, all those outfits were huge up there, and doing well.
Mm.
So anyway, and I couldn't have enjoyed it any more than I did the first time. It was fantastic. But I lost my voice again.
Oh.
Same thing. Got to this point where, it just ran out of steam. And I went, this is starting to look like a signal. Yeah. Maybe it's a signal to tell me to back off and get the hell out of here. So I kind of quit. I had to quit. And I started a landscaping apprenticeship. And after about a year, one of the other guys that was learning from the same fellow as me, we joined forces and became a partnership. So we had a landscaping partnership for another year. Where are we? That's about sort of 85, 86 or somewhere around about there. It might have been a bit late, 86, 87 maybe. And then that fell apart in the highest rainfall in Sydney for about 42 years.
Oh, great.
You may remember that up there, huge major companies like concreting companies were going out of business, millions and billions of dollars, because they couldn't work.
Mm.
And it went on for like 6 months. It was like almost raining every day for 6 months, just like never stopped. So we couldn't work. And I had a mortgage and the whole thing, So in the end, I just said to my partner, look, mate, I got to get out. I can't do this. Because in those first years and those in that sort of work, you can't get credit.
No, that's right.
All that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, we did good work. But we'd make, say, $5,000. And then we'd spend $6,000 on materials for the next job.
Great, yeah.
Well, that's fine, but there's like no money, right?
That's right.
So, and I just in the end, I said, mate, this is mad, man. I'm like about, you know, $20,000 in the red to the tax department, and I said, I've got to get out of here, you know. So I sold him all the gear, and just right then when I'm going, what the hell am I possibly going to do? Harvey James, who was working at Fender then as a rep, and we'd been friends all this time, he just said, oh, there's this gig going at Fender. You know, down in the warehouse. Do you want to do that? And I went, I'm in, really? Mate. Like, I can work inside. I can make some money and it's all great.
Yeah.
So I paid the tax department back in a year or two. And at the end of that second year or so, they stuck me on the road, repping. So for 21 years, I was a rep at Fender.
Did that take you right around Australia or just around New South Wales?
No, all around Australia, because at that point, there was only two reps. So we used to cover half Australia each.
Did that involve... when I say simply, there's nothing simple about selling, but was it selling guitars or was it also demonstrating?
I think I'm a handy player, but I'm not a, you know, if you're asking me, could I plug the guitar into the amp and demonstrate the amp's features and talk about the guitar? Yes, I could. But if you're asking me, could I do, you know, Tommy Emmanuel, sort of demonstrations?
Yeah,
no. That just wasn't my bag. But I could sing some songs and sort of demonstrate an acoustic guitar, like how you might use it in the real world. So all of those things came in handy, plus my experience in the industry.
Yes.
Because I knew most of the people.
That's right.
By the time I started doing that, like half the guys that I knew were either behind the counter in some shop or as a part-time job or whatever the case might be. So it was a great gig for, to coin a phrase, like an ex-muso per se. You know, it was a great gig.
Oh, yeah.
And I was very, very fortunate. You know, I went into a thing where I knew something about it and I wasn't selling car tyres or ball bearings or something. I actually kind of was in the game. So, you know, all those years it was great, you know, and I could meet up with all the guys all the time. That was right up until 2010.
And was that due to economic downturns or did you get sick of it or what?
Oh, you mean?
Yeah, when you left.
Why I left? Well, when I came back to live in Melbourne from Sydney in 2002, all the time I'd been a rep, part of this was my territory down here.
Mm.
So, of course, all the guys that I knew, Lindsay, Sam, you know, and
all your friends.
Yeah, all these people were still here.
Yeah.
So the connection maintained. And Sam and I had a duo.
Now, for people listening, that's Sam C.
We're talking Sam about. C, yes. Yeah, my great buddy, yeah. But, like, we'd had a duo after Stockley C. Mason broke up, right, in about 81, 82, right, when Stockley C. broke up. And it was called the Stuka Brothers. And we used to play downstairs at the Armadale Hotel, you know. And as you know, still then, the world was fantastic with pretty much all original bands in Australia. You could go to a night at the Armadale, Richard would be playing upstairs with Skyhooks or someone, and we'd be downstairs or somebody else. Right, and it was most of it was all original, and we used to play quite a lot of covers and stuff as the duo. So anyway, we remained friends all that time. I come back down in 2002 working for Fender, and so the friendship's maintained. Sam was promoting his own CD at that time, original CD, and I had been playing hardly at all for about 12 years. I picked up a guitar at a workshop and yelled and screamed the occasional song, but I wasn't
not
playing.
A professional musician.
No, I just wasn't playing at all. So anyway, we used to get to talk and we'd get over at Lindsay Field's place and we'd sing and play and get out of it and, you know, sing songs and really enjoy ourselves. And a few people said, well, why don't you do your duo, right? Anyway, at that point I said to Sam, look, you know, I wouldn't mind, you know, just come along if there's any time, or can we just get together and play some music? Because, you know, I got a bit of a vibe, you know, and I wouldn't mind getting a few chops up. So anyway, we sort of just used to start doing that as a casual thing. We weren't even going out, and Sam was doing his thing and Lindsay was with Farnham and all that. And so just got back into it that way.
Right.
Yeah, just started playing a bit and enjoyed it. And so by 2002, when I came back down, we decided to, at the end of that year, in actual fact, I think it was, we started doing some duo things, and our first gig was the Morty Alec Food and Wine Festival down at the bay there. And away we went.
Was that as the Partners?
As the Partners. Well, yeah, just Sam C and Glenn Mason then.
Oh, okay.
The Partners was not alive as a name.
Right.
And so we just went out and continued to do that, yeah. And then we both hit 60 years old in 2009. And I remember us having this discussion, and I just said to Sam, look, mate, I said, if we don't, and, you know, we'd done a fair bit of work, you know, from 2002, you know, we'd pretty solid, and we'd had a couple of really long residencies and all that sort of stuff, so, you know, we were doing okay, you know, hanging in there. I think we'd done our first CD. I actually can't remember whether the first one was actually then or not. But we decided that we'd better give it a crack at trying to have some sort of circuit or some jobs that we could play.
Yes.
To make it real, because at age 65, there was no point in, like, starting then, like, you know, in real terms. You know, we'd still want to play and stuff and have some fun, but there was no point in trying to actually do anything then, because people just wouldn't take any notice of you anyway, right?
Yeah.
So we did that, and Sam was fantastic for me, and he encouraged me to try and write some songs and play and all that stuff. So, you know, here we are today. Mm. So, you know, we got a couple of albums under our belt, and we're still playing, and Lindsay comes and sings with us, as you know now.
Yes.
And that's great fun, and so we've kind of got two bullets to our belt, so to speak, so if somebody rings up, you know, we can work either way. And, I guess I see the future being sort of that, you know, greatly enjoy it.
You have lived a life that some people would see as fairly exotic in terms of being in the entertainment industry for such a long time. I mean, 35 years is a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
What out of all of that has given you the greatest pleasure in that 35 years?
Well, the fact that I'm still here.
That's a damn good answer.
It's actually great still being vertical. You know, well, as we sadly talk about, mate, you and I many times, man, and I mean, here we are, we started off this particular little discussion about baby boomers, and, man, we're in this fraternity now that is slowly, slowly deleting.
We're becoming the older citizens, whether we like it or not.
Correct, you know, and the music... Let's always just maintain about the music that kept us going all these years, and we were a huge involvement in it, especially in those early years when it was our social existence. Mm. I'm so amazed that I'm still part of it. Now, you know, I wouldn't really call myself a musician, because the guys that I and women that I think are musicians, I think I've sort of ended up still in it kind of by default in some ways, because I went off for those years, and even in between my earlier bands, I think on two occasions I think I went and played solo, but like if you're talking about earlier than that, I went and did other jobs, like work jobs, not music, because it sort of seemed the easier option, and I could go into Centrelink, look up on the wall and, oh yeah, I'll go and do that. So instead of sort of, and that was sort of born partly out of necessity, and I think partly out of fear that I couldn't make any money. Mm. You know, I had no money. Well, how did you get money? You went into Centrelink and you were able to get your first paycheck within 14 days, and at least you get by while you're looking for a job. And then I could get a job because, you know, even though I was a musician, I was fortunate that I got gigs.
You've raised an interesting issue here, and sadly our time is almost up.
Right,
so
mate, yeah.
I'd like to just pick up on this theme of the work aspect that a lot of people in Australia, they talk about you go out to work or you're a musician.
Mm.
They don't see musicians or entertainers as a legitimate business, but you wouldn't agree with that, would you?
Well, I can only put it in Sam's case, for example. I've known him for a long time, and he's always tried to work and has been working as a musician. And most of what I call musicians are those people that have been dedicated enough and they've never let go of the rope. Most of the ones that I can think of off the top of my head are better than and incredible players and singers now, than sometimes they potentially were in their early years. Russell Morris and Brian Cadd and Glenn Shorrock and Sam See and Craig Newman and all these musicians that are incredible players. And
but is that surprising when you look at the American and we pick up on the early blues artists? The older they got, it was like a richness came.
And that is relevant here. But I'm surprised at the number of people who come up and go, wow, okay, so, you know, you're still doing it. Oh, and they're still doing it. And you go, well, yeah, why not?
Exactly.
And, man, if they knew how pretty much hard these people work on their game, I think they'd be really surprised.
There is still an attitude, and I think you might have said it towards the beginning of the interview when we were talking about the fact that you quit the polytechnic and become a musician, and your father either said it or intimated, get a real job. It's still not seen as a real job, though, is it, by a lot of people, even though it's... Is there anything more important than the cultural development?
No, probably not. And, you know, it's still intertwined with our world, you know. And I don't know. I think there's been a big return to live music, you know, away from just the recorded world. And I still get excited by watching live musicians and the interaction and all that stuff. And it's a fantastic arena if you really want to see stuff going on. And you watch the communication and great bands and musicians and stuff play, and you just go, wow, man, yeah, that's as good as it gets. And that's why, you know, they're endeared to people, I think. It'll remain so in my life. And as I just pointed out, I don't classify myself in that world, but I greatly enjoy it. And as long as I'm able to kind of just do what I'm doing at the moment, that's fine. You know, like, I'm happy. And if people come along and they enjoy it, that makes me happy too. I think I said to you the other day, you know, we play a lot to people who've been coming along since 2002 to watch us play. We call them the stalkers, right? But if there's some new faces turning up that come and see us play now, and they come up after the gig and go, man, that was just great. And you go, yeah, well, that's really cool.
It gives a buzz still.
Well, yeah, you know, well, it makes it worth it. You know, it makes it worth the what you do, you know, and you feel sort of worth something. You know, I think that's it, really. That's my lot. You know?
Glenn, there's no way we can get anybody's life in such a short span, but you've given us a fantastic series of snapshots of Glenn Mason from the beginning right through to Glenn Mason sitting here at Belgrave. And it's been a great journey, though.
Yeah.
And hopefully the journey's not over by any means.
Oh, no, no. Well, it's not now. It's kind of embedded, you know. And I guess my heart and that never left and probably won't, you know. Like, I still greatly enjoy it. So it's like just returning to, like, an old pair of socks, you know, or shoes. It's like going down that road. So it wasn't difficult to get back into it. Music today, the challenges couldn't be more diverse and heavier than they've ever been. It's really tough. But, you know, the youth out there, man, you know, there's some incredible artists and stuff. You know yourself. The world has expanded and, man, you know, it's alive and well. People just need to embrace it and probably not be afraid of it and stuff, you know, like the people who aren't musicians, because they just get guided by and taken away by so much other stuff now.
Mm.
And it really is part of the, as you just pointed out, the living world. It's the living world. It's not a computer screen and stuff, although I greatly enjoy YouTube and stuff myself, because I can see some of these people that I'll probably never get a chance to.
Exactly.
But, you know, I would say to those people, get on YouTube and check some of that stuff out, and then get out and see some live talent, because there's seriously live talent here that's as good as anything anywhere in the world, you know.
And while live music is healthy, country's healthy.
Well, I think so. Well, it raises the spirit, you know, and it gives you all of the elements of the things that you live in. It talks and tells. It's storytelling time. It talks about the hardships, and it talks about the great times, and it talks about lunacy, and, you know, can be as lateral as you want it to be as well, you know.
Glenn, thank you very much for being on the program.
No worries, Rob. All the best, mate. Thank you.
And to finish up, here's Glenn with his music partner Sam C doing a Glenn Mason composition, Moonlight Can Be My Friend.
There's There's a rig called Annie, and it's heading out to Scone. Diesel smoking, blowing out the moon. I'm in my cocoon, and I got the high beam on, and I'm riding with the silhouettes and ghosts. Mark Jordan plays the jazz, and Delbert lays down the groove. Their rhythm takes me to another place, where the T-Birds and the Mustangs graze on the boulevard. I'm a thousand miles away, a gypsy on this motorway, and wide lines and canola fields, high tension wires on towers of steel. My hands on the wheel, I could be anywhere. All I know is now, baby, is that you're not here. My Valentine, it's just these freeway signs, and I'm borderline again. So tonight, the moonlight can be my friend. There's no soul in this roadhouse as Annie moves out ahead. The trailer lights and through the dust, the devil's eyes that burn in red. Another ghost in the mirror is staring back at me. The sky falls down to cover me, and through the windscreen all I see are white lines and canola fields, high tension wires on towers of steel. My hands on the wheel, I could be anywhere. All I know is now, darling, is that you're not here to be my Valentine. Just these freeway signs, and I'm borderline again. So tonight, moonlight can be my prayers. Are hard to come by with so much time you spend alone. So much time alone can play with your mind. I'm on this runaway kind of groundhog day. The road keeps on winding. You're not here to be my Valentine. Just these freeway signs, and I'm borderline again. So tonight, tonight.
This program is a Handsome Doc production and is podcast through the Toorak Times and TAG.